Join the Guardian Social Enterprise Network today. It's the largest online community of social entrepreneurs, and it's completely free. Visit guardian.co.uk/socialpodcast to register. The network gives you space to share knowledge, to discuss new ideas, and promote best practice in delivering your enterprise's social mission and business objectives. Plus, you can create your free company profile to easily connect with your peers, potential customers, suppliers, and commissioners. It can also increase your website traffic. Registering is quick and easy. Sign up now at guardian.co.uk/socialpodcast.
The Guardian.
Hello and thanks for taking the time to listen. I'm Sean McGinty and I'm your host for the Guardian Social Enterprise Network podcast. This is podcast number 10. This month, scaling up your social enterprise. Well, how does that work? And in fact, should scale be your goal if you can achieve your social aims without it?
We're finding a lot of social enterprises are having a huge impact just by sharing their ideas and getting other people to do similar work to them, to build on their success.
That's Fergus Lyon from the Third Sector Research Centre at Middlesex University. And how do you get the finance to grow your social enterprise? Here's one way of looking at it.
There are very few places you can get that money. And generally that comes from government, philanthropy, individual investors and a few foundations and a lot of blood and sweat. Mm. So we probably spent about 5 years just getting enough data so that we could show that the numbers began to stack up.
That's what you do. You get 5 years worth of data. That's Faisal Rahman, who's Managing Director of Fair Finance, showing in their case what works is patience. More from him later in the podcast.
The Guardian.
So I'm back in the studio this month after being allowed out for a couple of podcasts, and I come to one of the subjects that's most relevant for most social enterprises, if that's a grammatically correct sentence. So in this podcast, I'm considering what scaling up means for the social business. Scaling up for many commercial outfits might mean a local business angel would take a stake or give a loan. It could mean the bank, although that isn't that easy these days, is it? Possibly invoice discounting or some variation on that theme. Of course, if the business has an asset, they can borrow against that too. All of these are commercial decisions and they're dependent upon the commitment and business nous of the business concerned and their directors. And the directors have got to choose to risk their own finances on the venture. Sure, they take the losses, but they also take the possible upside too. Now, social enterprises sometimes work that way, but more often than not, they get to the point where to keep moving forward, they need to scale up and find some money to do that. I spoke with Professor Fergus Lyon from Middlesex University and the Third Sector Research Centre, and he talked to me about his research.
I'm at Middlesex University. I'm part of the Third Sector Research Centre. This is a collaboration between a number of universities, also including Southampton and led by Birmingham. And we've been researching a number of topics, but I've been particularly interested in the work on social enterprise, and we've been looking at issues such as the scale of social enterprises, how they grow, and also how they're responding to new sort of challenges that are being faced at the moment.
The subject of this podcast this month is scaling up, and I think that you kind of go against what most people's thoughts of scaling up might be, especially if you're thinking just about the social benefit. At the end of your research, you came up with a thought that maybe it's not just about having 150 sites across the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's anything wrong if you've got a fantastic idea and having 150 sites, but it's the you've got to look at what your objective is. What's your organisation? What's the social enterprise trying to do? And if it's having a bigger social impact, there are different ways of doing it. One is growing your own organisation, but also we're finding a lot of social enterprises are having a huge impact just by sharing their ideas and getting other people to do similar work to them, to build on their success.
Right, it's interesting that there's kind of, I guess there's a number of different sort of levels of sharing, if you like. I mean, Twitter and I guess other social media sites as well seem to involve a lot of social businesses sharing information and chatting to each other. So that's kind of one level. What are you finding above social media? What sort of networking is going on?
Well, I think you can look at some of it is just people just talking about their work, but others are getting much more engaged as well. So you could have various organisations have started training other people as well. And they've actually taken their networking and sharing and turned it into an income stream for themselves anyway.
So they've got a good idea. They're trying to progress that. And one of the ways in which they're doing it is perhaps to get paid by other people for showing them how they've done it.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's other ways as well. There's people talk about the social franchising. There aren't that many cases of it. There's a lot of talk about it. But that's a way where people can try and find ways of taking their model and sharing it with others. Also, you have people who might be, organizations that are coming to them and saying, will you help us set up something similar? And so they can provide them with the management systems and all sorts of the background things required to help them get up and going quickly. So they're, again, selling on some of their specialisms as well, but helping these other organisations get going and having a bigger impact elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, this all sounds good, but I guess there's a downside to this. What might that be?
Well, the interesting thing is that it is, as social enterprises, as when they've got to look at their enterprise side as well as a social angle, is they've got to be sustainable and got to continue in the future as well. So this knowledge that they're sharing is also their one of their sort of what you might call their intellectual property. It keeps them going. And if everybody, there's a bit of tension sometimes, you could say, between whether they share all their information or should they keep some things to themselves, just because if everybody does, has their knowledge, then would they get the future contracts and would they survive themselves? So every organization has to balance up what's its social impact, but also, what can it share without sort of damaging itself?
Did you find in the research that a lot of these companies are sort of contract-based companies in terms of working with the public sector and trying to gain, government contracts for doing various pieces of work in a social sense? Or did you find they were merely sort of local businesses trading and that they had a social spin-off as well?
There's two bits of work we've been doing. One was looking at early years sector, where there is the relationships to the public sector are quite important there. And another one was looking at on the environmental sector, where again, sort of contracts with the public sector again came up quite important, particularly for those organisations that had been growing slightly faster. And I think in these cases, these organisations are competing against private sector businesses. So they do have to be, as well as competing against other charities and social enterprises. So, I think we've got to recognise that it is a competitive environment, increasingly competitive environment out there.
So it's difficult to understand, really, when you sort of look at it in that sense, in the cold light of day, looking at the kind of commercial imperatives that are there. All this caring, sharing, lovely stuff, which you're talking about, which does sound great, no commercial company would dream of doing that. They'd just steam in and get the contracts, wouldn't they?
I think that's where social enterprise is so interesting, because it's always having to balance on a day by day basis deciding what they're doing, but also in their longer term strategies of balancing that social with the business side as well, and that's the constant challenge that sort of leaders of social enterprises have to face.
Is the challenge of the scaling up and the things we've just been discussing, is this to do with getting venture capital, getting some form of capital to help these companies grow? Because I guess in the commercial sector, some directors have to come together and decide if they want to put their own money in or try and find somebody else's. In the social sector, it doesn't work quite that way, does it?
Yeah, coming from our work, we're finding that there is a demand for sort of various forms of finance to come into the sector, but we're trying to get a bit more of a handle of where is that actual demand from, because organisations that do want to grow are not willing to put their houses up as collateral for loans. Because they don't have the ownership of it. So there's a challenge there. But we're finding as well that they're also many of them are not actually wanting to go for loan finance and trying to find other ways of growing, maybe sort of growing slightly slower by using their own surpluses and resources. But there is a demand for some of them to grow. But I think it is just a small part of the social enterprise sector that will actually be wanting to have these loans.
That's Professor Fergus Lyon from Middlesex University and the Third Sector Research Centre. If you want to find out more, you can go to www.tsrc.ac.uk. This is the Guardian Social Enterprise Podcast, and I'm Sean McGinty. So there we have one view that scaling up, if you're focused on your social goal, may not necessarily be the way ahead. So I brought together three people with different perspectives on how you might scale up. Dan Berelowitz, Chief Executive of the International Centre for Social Franchising, Richard Kennedy, who's Head of Social Investment at Cannes, and Faisal Rahman, who's Managing Director of Fair Finance. I asked Faisal first how he'd found the process of scaling up his social enterprise.
As a business, we kind of launched officially in 2005, so really we've spent the last 7 years just building and building and building. And I have to be totally honest with you, probably the first 5 years of building Fair Finance was more about proving that the idea and the model really worked. And the reality is that when you're trying to prove something, there are very few places you can get that money. And generally that comes from government, philanthropy, individual investors and a few foundations and a lot of blood and sweat. Mm. So we probably spent about 5 years just getting enough data so that we could show that the numbers began to stack up. And in about 2010, so 5 years after that, we were able to build a convincing case to show that our business not only made money as it was, but could make money if it was much bigger. And that has real opportunity to kind of meet demand and repay investors and raise capital. And so from about 2010 to about 2011, we managed to use that data to raise around about £1 million of social investment. So this is money from a group of high net worth investors, foundations and others, where we promised them the money back with a bit back on top of it. And we were able to leverage around about £4 million from a range of private sector organisations on commercial terms. That's funding our growth, and that's going to see Fair Finance grow from being, as it was, 3 branches in 2010 to around 12 branches by about 2015.
And what was the process like? I mean, did you have to approach high net worth individuals? Did you have some sort of intermediary? What was that process like in finding that money?
I think the first step was around figuring out whether the people in the business were the right people in the business, because I think ultimately whoever's going to look at what we're doing wants to get a sense of our credibility. So actually, for about 2 years, we spent all of our time updating, fixing, strengthening our board. That was the first stage. Before we even started talking to anyone, we thought about the process and we spent 2 years identifying the right kind of people to bring onto the board, and then start thinking really hard about the right kind of people who needed to be in the business. If you're going to ask for £10 million or £5 million or £100 million, the people who look at your business are going to ask, is there anyone there who's actually run a business? Is there anyone there who knows what £5 million of turnover really looks like? So we spent probably more time getting the right people on board, more time getting the right data, and more time kind of strengthening the governance before we then figured out exactly what we wanted to ask for. So there were two different markets that we were looking for. So one around investment. So that's a really clear market. That's a group of people who like to take a risk, who are interested in impact, who are kind of this nascent idea of social investment. We worked with a group of intermediaries, a couple of foundations, people we worked with for a long time. And we just convened meetings. We shared a business model. We shared the team. We got them to meet the organization. We probably spent about 6 months letting them get a sense of who we were, what we were doing, and how we were doing it before we got any cash. The private sector, in terms of the commercial funding, was totally different. We had to prove that we had everything ready, and we had to prove that our numbers stacked up, and that needed finance data, accounting data, auditing data. And in some ways, it was a lot more straightforward. It took us the same amount of time, but it took us less information to prove it.
Now, this it sort of takes you away from, in a way, what you set up Fair Finance for, doesn't it? I mean, did you spend much of your time with this kind of investment readiness? I mean, you seem pretty organised in what you're doing there. That's taken up a lot of your time, has it?
I think you're right. The reality, one of the ideas about strengthening the board was that they should be involved in some of that process, and they definitely were part of that. But the fact is that whoever's running the business is the person who's going to be able to pitch and sell it better. And sadly, they're generally the most expensive person in the business, and they're probably the one who understands it the best. So you're taking the most productive person out of doing it. So you kind of got to be pretty sure you're going to get the money, otherwise it's just not worth it. So I probably spent, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about how much time we spent getting the right people into the organization. So spending 2 years getting people who could run it so that I could have the freedom to go out and talk to investors, get them comfortable with the model, and spend a bit of time getting them to understand the way that we want to raise the financing.
Okay, I've already heard in this podcast from Professor Fergus Lyon, who's from the Third Sector Research Centre at Middlesex University. And in that interview, he was sort of saying, you know, it's about social impact. And when you're looking at scaling up a social enterprise, it's not necessarily about having lots of branches. Did you ever consider, Faisal, that you got a great model, it seems to be working, you've got some numbers to prove it, but instead of doing it yourself, you just kind of go open it up and see who else wants to get involved?
Absolutely. I think the fact is there is no one answer to building a business. I mean, everybody knows that. You only have to look at how the private sector is full of range of organisations, from franchises to conglomerates to small businesses to partnerships, to understand that there is no one answer. And anyone who pretends as such probably doesn't know what they're talking about. The fact is that you kind of have to figure out what the best way is for you, and the best way for your business, and the best way for the problem that you're solving. In all issues, you have to really turn it back to what is the problem you're solving, what's the best way to get to it, and how can you really prove it? The thing that we were really conscious of is that we had a small business with a good idea and a big ambition, And it's pretty hard to scale an unsustainable business that isn't very big, that doesn't have a proven track record. We wanted to get ourselves to be that scale to then start thinking about different types of ways of doing it.
Okay, now Dan Berelowitz, who's chief executive of the International Centre for Social Franchising, Faisal's story there and Fair Finance, is that the sort of organisation where you think that's great for franchising? Hey, let's get involved.
Well, we look for proven social enterprise. I mean, I don't know, tend to need to know a few details about the organisation to know whether it's right or not. But I think at the most basic level, if it's achieving social impact and if it's got a sustainable financial model, then it's definitely worth having a look at. But I mean, I couldn't agree more with what Faisal said. I mean, the reason why I set this up is that we see a lot of organisations who are in that stage where they've proven or near proven and are thinking, how do we scale up? And actually, founding an organisation, proving it works, is a very hard thing to do, and get it right requires a skill set. It's actually quite a different set of skills and disciplines to taking that idea and replicating it and spreading it. So we come in at that critical point where the original model has worked and it's ready to scale up. So yeah, I mean, I'd be excited about that model. I'd be excited to have a conversation with anyone who thinks that their model is pretty proven, really.
And what sort of people is the International Centre for Social Franchising working with? What sort of organisations?
So we're agnostic to the organisational type, as long as it's creating social impact. So I'll give you a couple of examples of people we're working with at the minute. Street League, which is actually a charity that uses football to get young people into work. And they're becoming more of a social enterprise. So in the last 2 years, they're now earning 50%. 50% of their income, and they think they'll be able to do more than that. So they've got a few replications that are working really successfully, about 4 or 5. They're aiming for 12, but they thought they should take a step back and look, if we want to have national reach, what do we need to do in the next next 4 or 5 years to achieve that? So we've already sat down with them and helping them do that. So that's one example, and the other is GlaxoSmithKline, the pharmaceutical company, where we're looking at replicable healthcare models that are at least breaking even and financially, increasing market access, but crucially creating significant social benefit, and helping them look at what sort of investments, what sort of organisations they might want to invest in.
That's two very interesting examples, isn't it? Because you've got your huge conglomerate drugs company and your small sort of street league social enterprise that wants to grow. It's two very different conversations, but what does a big drug company get out of this?
I mean, GSK are particularly interesting because their chief executive, who came in a couple of years ago, Andrew Whitty, is really interested in market access. There are 2 billion people in the world who don't have access to essential medicines. How do you make sure that the right drug is getting to the right people? So he set up a team which looks at the 50 poorest countries in the world, and really they're aiming in the... they're aiming for profitability eventually, but at the moment it's about getting, as I say, their medicines to the right people. They're basically aiming to break even or make a small amount of surplus. It's a small part of the business. What that means in reality is that they're open to working with a whole range of people, from NGOs to social enterprise, because they're just aiming to get their product to as many people as possible and change lives doing it.
Right, Richard Kennedy, Head of Social Investment at CanInvest. You've got a range of different things you do, and I guess sort of you've got your building and you kind of do that locally. But talk me through, I mean, you've just come hot foot this lunchtime from a conference talking about investment readiness. And that's kind of what we're about in this conversation, is scaling up an investment readiness. What are the sort of key messages, if Faisal hasn't already said them rather professionally just earlier, what are the key messages?
Yeah, so I've just come from Good Deals, which is a conference that's running in London Bridge at the moment. And I think there's an incredible opportunity at the moment in the market. We've got the Big Society Capital as a huge catalyst and a potential for change to support charities and social enterprises to scale up and grow their social impact, hopefully providing, as Faisal is, a small return for people that would invest as well. But the challenge is supporting organisations, getting them to the place where they're able to actually take on that investment. And I think what Faisal's talked about is absolutely fantastic, which is, first and foremost, the first thing people look for is, finding the right people. and absolutely, it's about who have you got on your board, what are the skills that you've got, and who's actually going to be running the business, and then your track record and the investment case. I think those are the really, really important things. Things that we look for are, you know, have you got a credible business plan? Is it scalable? You know, all of the kind of things that you would look for, I suppose, in a private investment. But the critical differentiator is the social impact. And, you know, not all things should be scaled. There are some local charities and social enterprises that are fantastic at being local. Scale is not the answer to everything. So I think the first question people need to ask is, you know, is scale right for me? And is that what I want to do? You know, if that is the case, then, you know, you need to put in place the processes so that you're able to do that. Mm. And social investment represents an opportunity for charities and social enterprises to access a different type of capital. Hopefully it would never fund programs. The social investment should be supporting organizations to scale, so investing in systems and people to help those organizations to grow. It represents a great opportunity, and what CAN does is help organizations to understand that elusive thing called social value. And then we're also an approved supplier on the Investment and Contract Readiness Fund, which is a £10 million Cabinet Office fund to support charities and social enterprises that are looking to raise investment or compete for government contracts.
So is it kind of a filter? I mean, there's some money there, and, you know, at the end of the day, not everybody's going to get it because it's £10 million. Is it sort of a filtering process you're doing? And how do these local groups respond to that when they sort of think, brilliant, we're a big society, we're doing great stuff, but you look at them and think, well, it's not good for expansion?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a challenge, and the bar for the Investment and Contract Readiness Fund is reasonably high. You have to be seeking at least £500,000 worth of investment, or be going for £1 million plus government contracts. So the Investment and Contract Readiness Fund is not for everyone, and there are other support and other grant funds that I believe are coming that will serve probably the more local organisations. So it's not for everyone, and that's why I think you need to sort of look in the mirror, talk to your board, talk to your team, and have that conversation before you start going out to the market and trying to raise this kind of finance.
Who's there addressing the smaller sort of the social enterprises and charities that have got a really good social impact locally, you know, but as you say, maybe don't have some of the skills? Is that being addressed? Because those are quite big numbers. If you're talking about getting £1 million contracts from the government, they're really, there's a lot of contracts that could be done by small social enterprises. They're not getting done. They're still being done by the usual people.
Yeah, I think there's a huge challenge there, and actually we've seen it in some of the, you know, some of the work program providers that have you know, effectively subcontracting down to smaller social enterprises, and unfortunately it doesn't always work, and some of those organisations have been promised you know, a certain number of contracts or a certain revenue, and then it hasn't come through, and it hurts the smaller social enterprises and charities. You know, I think those organisations need to, as Fazel did in the early days, make sure you've got the right people around you, understand your business model, put together a credible case, and work on actually doing it rather than talking about it. And I think that's, again, something Faisal's very good at, is actually driving the business, not the rhetoric.
Well, Faisal, let me ask you about this then. In terms of the way that Rich has just been expressing that, and let's look at the sort of smaller social enterprise that's doing great work locally and is involving a lot of people, and it's a good community venture. You're a passionate guy, or else you wouldn't have set Fair Finance up. When you see those small organisations struggling and not getting small contracts that they perhaps could get from local councils, how does it make you feel?
I think what it makes you realise is that the struggles of small social enterprises are no different from the struggles of small businesses. Small businesses struggle to kind of engage with government and other companies because they're so small. And lots of small social enterprises really struggle to have the systems and capabilities to really evidence what they're doing, show people how they're interacting, and find the right doors that they can open. I think what I often find, I probably get more annoyed with, not the fact that they have difficulty getting the contracts, is that often they aren't even told how they could get those contracts. Mm. There is no simple, straightforward, transparent process. And while it's all well and good to talk about building these organisations to be more ready for bigger contracts or to find these funds, there's precious little investment and funding going to the bigger organisations to figure out how to work with smaller organisations. So how many government departments have a procurement department that knows how to work with a small community organisation? How many businesses, like GSK or others, have a department that knows how to engage with a 5 or 6 person social business in outside Rotherham or something. So I think that's an interesting area that not many people are thinking about.
I mean, Dan, well, coming back to GSK, do we call them? Coming back to them, have they managed that? Have they cracked that then? Have they sort of, are they starting to work out how it's good for them? Because, you know, they're selling products as well. It's good for them to kind of work with small groups.
There's definitely a growing appetite for corporates in the UK to build social enterprise into their supply chains. Interesting though, I'm struck from the conversation that there's a big question around how do you stay local and keep small but still have all the systems and processes in place and some of the power that being a big organization has, and really that's part of the reason why I set up the center. I mean, the commercial franchising sector in the UK is now worth £13.5 billion, and it just doesn't exist in the social enterprise world. There's no reason that we or anyone else has found why that is, other than just, you know, we are where we were in the 70s with franchising. There just weren't very many of them and not many people were doing it. So really the mission that my organization and others are on is how do you take those great ideas, systematize them? We're looking for pioneers who are willing to become franchisors or whatever you call it, and allow lots of small organisations who are able to work within their local area to just be better at what they do.
Is anybody amongst you, Dan and Richard and Faisal, kind of frustrated because it feels like the government, yes, they are doing these things, but they're very gentle sort of little taps in a direction, and sometimes you have to lead and you have to give more than a gentle tap, possibly even a slap.
I wonder if maybe the slap is kind of, that's an interesting thought actually. I think the slap is actually to the sector rather than to the government. It's always very easy to kind of ask the government for a bit more money. I mean, the reality is there seems to be two types of social businesses or social enterprises in the UK. Those that seem to deliver something the government wants and those that try to fix a market problem. And I think there's a lot of focus, rightly so, around making public services better and delivering public services through intermediaries like social businesses. It can add great social value to the taxpayer. But I think there's precious little focus on those social enterprises and businesses which are addressing market failures, none of which are public problems, but they're social problems. And in order to be successful in those areas, you kind of don't need more government money. You just need a bit of space in order to get some work done, and you need the right people and you need access to capital. And that's less about beating up the government than slapping a few people in the sector around and saying, come on guys, let's get a bit more realistic. Which market are you trying to do some work in? What problem are you trying to fix? Have you found a model that actually gives something back to someone, and can you evidence it to them? If it's a public problem, go to the government. If it's not, find a way to find a group of investors who could do it, and just be very straightforward and honest with yourself about if it works.
So your organisation, Fair Finance, in terms of what it does in the community, what's the kind of top thing that you would say? Obviously, you know, you allow people to get access to finance and loans that you know, some of us take for granted and that maybe wouldn't get them. But what are the community benefits? What sort of on the ground can you see as a real benefit?
So I think one of the ways to think about it is kind of to look at what the problem is. And I suppose the problem that we see around us, and actually it's really topical if you just look at the headlines of the papers today, but the issues of people who have difficulty accessing finance are often borrowing at expensive rates. Often those with the least amount of money borrow at rates that they can barely afford. On top of that, they have no way out of it, right? They have no way of making their lives better and moving into the mainstream. What we've managed to design and develop is a way of underwriting, lending, advising and supporting people that allows us to be a lot cheaper, allows us to build their skills, their financial skills, and finally put them in a position where they might be saving or creating businesses or advising them in some positive way. So when you look at the kind of outputs, the outputs are really simple. They're things like we're helping people buy a washing machine or a cooker. We're helping them buy a christening present sometimes. We're helping them start a business, or in some cases we're helping them not be evicted, and we're trying to push them in a positive and sustainable path out of there. But if you look at the impact, so the actual, not just the output, but the outcome, you can see real life changes. You can see people who can engage in society better. You can see people who feel like they have a stake in their community. You can see communities where people aren't evicted as much, and there are less empty properties. There is less social antisocial behavior in certain areas, and there's rising incomes as people have more money to spend on local services and goods. Now, in a kind of an interesting way, the only benefit that's being accrued by Fair Finance doing a really good job is to the people. is to the individuals who use it, not to anyone else. So in some ways, it doesn't really matter for us whether the government is positive or negative around social enterprise. It's actually what's going on in our society around us.
I'm sat here in Blackburn, and you know, within minutes of walking from here, there are people in exactly the situation that you have in, you know, Dalston and Hackney and Tower Hamlets. Who's helping these people? And if you've got a great model, shouldn't the government, or shouldn't somebody, or shouldn't one of these kind of you know, social investment funds that are knocking around, shouldn't they be enabling you to get up here and do some good with your Fair Finance work?
Because actually, sometimes when you look at the impact of activities, it's pretty hard to prove to government how useful it is for them directly. So the impact of helping people out of debt maybe has a long-term impact in improving the state of the public finances, but it's pretty tough to prove, right? So in my experience, having done this work for the last 12 years, wherever government has got involved around this kind of stuff, they've generally made a mess and made it quite difficult for anyone to do anything efficiently or successfully. I think the interesting thing has happened in the last couple of years, where non-governmental bodies like Big Society Capital or other kind of organisations who can take a much more problem approach to the issue can find a way of funding you that works. So, you know, if there was a fund from the government for me to go to Blackburn, I can assure you that it wouldn't be to do Fair Finance. It would be to do something the government needed.
Yeah.
However, I'm hoping that you can go to a group of investors, social investors or otherwise, who care about this issue, and they would fund this issue, and they would fund this way of fixing the problem. I mean, just while we're on it, there is a very great organisation in Blackburn called East Lancs Moneyline, which does what we do, so I recommend
Absolutely.
You talk to them.
Do you know, I was going to mention credit unions, because, I mean, that's a model that's there already. And just briefly then, Faisal, why are you different from a credit union? Or are you kind of, you know, credit union 2.0 or something?
Credit unions are fantastic financial cooperatives, so they're great for people who can build savings. One of the limitations they have is that they have a limited geographic area, and they can only lend to people who've saved. What we've found, and what I found, and the reason why I created Fair Finance, is that there are just some people who are too poor to save right now because they're borrowing at expensive rates. So our model is designed around working with those people. So we kind of get to poorer people who are more excluded on the margins of society. And our view is that eventually they could become bank or credit union clients once they've built some savings, built a sustainable kind of livelihood. So we're not competing, we're kind of filling that space in front of them to give them a chance to move in.
Dan, what does your research tell you about organisations, you know, that are doing good work locally? Maybe it is tough for a government to measure it and go, yeah, we get what that's doing, we'll have a slice of that.
Yeah, government's an interesting one. I mean, my background is the NGO sector, and we had a number of grants from, we were working internationally from DFID and other government departments. And I just find that often governments, you know, they think in short cycles, 3 to 5 years. And actually, the problems that many of us are dealing with, you know, three generations of unemployment, can't be solved in 3 to 5 year cycles. So I'm really interested in this connection between the private and social sectors. I think government definitely has a role to play, certainly in with sort of startup funding. In terms of the most recent research we've done into the viability of investment into social franchising, we've seen a couple of really interesting examples. Public sector mutuals or spin-offs. There are a whole lot of you know, great people from within local councils who are, you know, being made redundant or need to set up social enterprises. So we're working with the Cabinet Office on thinking about, you know, could you systematize some of the most successful small businesses that have been spun off and help them replicate.
That was Richard Kennedy from CanInvest closing that debate. Thanks to Faisal Rahman from Fair Finance and to Dan Berilowitz from the International Centre for Social Franchising. So here's how you get in touch. You can email me at seanmcginty.co.uk or david.mills@guardian.co.uk. If you're on Twitter, tweet us your thoughts to @GuardianSockEnt, or my personal Twitter is @SeanAMcginty. And please remember to share us with your friends and colleagues in the usual way. Next month, we're talking the public sector in social enterprises, so any ideas, please send them my way. I'm Sean McGinty. Thanks for listening, and see you next time for more news, comment and information from the Guardian Social Enterprise Network. You should join it. It's free.
The Guardian.
Join the Guardian Social Enterprise Network today. It's the largest online community of social entrepreneurs, and it's completely free. Visit guardian.co.uk/social podcast to register. The network gives you space to share knowledge, to discuss new ideas, and promote best practice in delivering your enterprise's social mission and business objectives. Plus, you can create your free company profile to easily connect with your peers, potential customers, suppliers, and commissioners. It can also increase your website traffic. Registering is quick and easy. Sign up now at guardian.co.uk/social podcast.